Chapter 11. Belief. Chthonian truth. Error. The time passed in the dimming and brightening of the cell's only light. Cord slept and ate and let his dreams take him. He saw Yearn again, saw the hinterlands around the coast cities, the fields waving in the summer wind. He saw old friends and heard old words of hurt and love that he had forgotten. He saw his father, gone to the dirt long before Cord had taken the silk ribbons of service and gone to be a soldier. And when he woke, the dreams clung to his thoughts like words blown into the present from the past. He began to live for the dreams, but to dread the waking. He counted each time he slept until the numbers frayed in his mind and the points seemed to be lost. He wondered what had become of the rest of his crew, if they too turned through the circle of sleep and waking just as he did. He wondered what future he had led them to. Then, in a gap between dreaming, the door to the cell opened. Cord looked up, expecting to see a guard. The face of a demigod looked back at him. Manetius stepped through the door, and it locked behind him.
"I wish to speak to you," said the Iron Hand.
"Then speak," replied Cord,
not breaking eye contact, not showing fear, even though it was crawling through his guts.
"You have met our kind before."
"Yes, I fought on Ascanis with some of your kin."
"I have not heard of that war."
"Most wars are unknown to someone."
"Why were you out on the world above?" "I ask this, not the Brigadier Elite."
"But you are here by her authority?"
"By my own."
"Well, she commands here, though."
"If you have seen us in war, you know that we are our own authority."
"I have. And I know that warriors of the 10th Legion rarely ask questions to learn answers."
"Then why do we ask questions?"
"To confirm knowledge."
Manetius nodded slowly.
"You are following an Iron Warrior's formation across the edge of the Khedive. The enemy was light strength, alone, and without deep support. A hunter patrol, your commanders called them. But they were not hunters. There was something else."
"Seekers."
"That is what you believe?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"Do you remember where you were born, Manetius?"
Cord thought he saw the shadow of a frown on the Iron Hand's commander's face.
"I do. I remember the house where I grew up. I remember the smell of the food my grandfather cooked. I remember the red and blue cups I played with before I could speak. I remember leaving it. I remember the doors of the landing craft closing on the light of my last morning. I remember realizing that everything I had known would only be a memory from then on. I knew what I was doing. I knew that I would not go back. It was a choice, a sacrifice."
"You believed in something greater?"
Manetius nodded.
"I believed that I could be part of something greater, that what I would do and everything that would happen mattered, that everything has a purpose."
"And you still believe that?"
"Yes," said Cord. "I still believe that there is a reason for everything, even if we cannot see it. I have to believe that."
"Why?"
"Otherwise, there is nothing but chance laughing at us."
"You killed those under your command," said Manetius,
his voice the flat hammer of stated truth.
"You allowed what you believed to draw you on, and if you felt any doubts, you put them aside, and so you led them to death."
Cord felt the muscle harden in his jaw, the heavy warmth as blood flushed to his muscles. He returned the stare.
"Yes," he replied.
Manetius nodded, and something in the grey skin of his face changed. Cord had the strange feeling that the Iron Hand commander had just passed some kind of judgment.
"But you do not ask for forgiveness. You do not think you were wrong."
Cord dropped his gaze for the first time. He thought of the ambush, of the sound of shrapnel ringing from War Anvil's hull. He thought of Augustus Fask's red, fat face.
No,
he said at last, looking back at Manutius.
No, I was.
And am right.
There is a reason all this is happening, and no one wants to see it.
Manutius blinked slowly and then nodded again.
Those that followed you died because of failures. Some of those failures are yours, some of them their own. Life exists because of strength, the strength to move from the present into the future. Life ends when strength fails. You did what you knew you had to. You followed what you knew was right. They failed as much as you. Their death does not make what you believe false.
Cord did not know what to say. It was the most he had ever heard an Iron Hand legionary say. There was something else as well, a feeling that Manutius was not talking about him at all.
How did you come here, Manutius?
He was not sure why he asked, just that it was the right question to ask.
From Istvan.
Cord nodded.
Well, thank you for the conversation.
Manutius frowned for the first time.
This was not a conversation. I simply wished you to understand what will happen now.
He stood and turned for the door. Cord did not move. Manutius knocked on the door and it opened. He looked back at Cord.
Come with me.
Cord hesitated and then rose and stepped towards the door. He could see the guard on the other side of the open door, his hand hesitating as it reached for his weapon. Manutius's hand barely seemed to move. Stillness filled the outer chamber.
This is not your duty, said the Iron Hand commander to the guard, his voice low.
Cord felt the instinct to run, shiver down his limbs.
This man passes from here as I pass. Do you understand?
The guard nodded slowly.
You will comply.
The guard nodded again. Manutius let his hand drop from where it had rested on the man's arm. He turned away and walked from the chamber into the corridor beyond. After a second, Cord followed. When he glanced back, he saw that the guard was still shaking.
Where are you taking me?
He asked. Manutius growled, or perhaps it was a low laugh.
To find the truth, he said.
Herend walked with the storm. Around him, the Iron Warriors and Alpha Legion machines kept in close formation. The rattle of dust stole the sound of tracks and engines. Within the storm, there was no day, no night, just the crackle of signals holding them together as they pushed on. Questions walked with Herend, voices that asked him what he was doing, and all the while the call of the black sun rose and fell in him like a tide. Thetacron and the other Alpha Legion machines said next to nothing. Once they had advised Herend to call a halt in the lee of a crag of rock, saying that the storm would not let them continue for now. Herend had agreed, and they had clustered together, a string of wind-scoured iron and azure blue. An hour later, the dust gloom had become a strobing cauldron of lightning. Great dry booms of thunder shook the ground and air. It had lasted for a full day, and even when it had passed, the storm remained. Herend imagined the storm front circling the land, gathering dust and strength like a serpent eating its own tail. Once the lightning tide passed, they had carried on, pressing on in silence through a never-ending veil. With every step, the black sun seemed closer. He did not sleep anymore, but the dreams chased him without pause. He dreamed of Olympia. He dreamed of the world within the eye of terror. He dreamed of burning, of his flesh becoming slime inside his armor. He should have died then. He should have died again, up in the valley beneath the pass, with the snow of a dead world as his shroud. Yet he lived, and tried not to think how the damage to his frame had seemed to heal like flesh, how he could sometimes feel the wind blow over him, even though his skin was nothing but plasteel and ceramite. He thought he could hear laughter in the rattle of dust against metal. When the first men had brought iron from the fire and put an edge to the first blade. They had created this strength, and it was a strength that could not exist without its twin. What was a blade without the blood it drew? What was armor without the blow that rang upon it? They were strong, and he was strong, and that strength would not be allowed to fail. It would live as only iron could live, in blood. Master, Yavak broke his thoughts. The navigator...
Change the frequency, growled Herend.
Just beside him, close enough to touch, the serpent-etched hull of the Alpha Legion Land Raider kept pace with him. The Vox rattled as it jumped between channels. The navigator has begun to speak.
He has spoken before.
He speaks without pause.
What is he saying?
He says the gate of the gods draws near. Herend felt cold flicker through limbs he no longer had. He says that the black sun rises.
We follow where he leads, said Herend.
What of our allies?
They must know nothing.
Beside him, the Alpha Legion machine swept on in silence. The lights in Argonis's cell cut out. The spiral of thoughts in his head vanished. He came to full readiness, muscles poised, every sense open. For a handful of seconds, there was silence. Then he heard a sound, low, vibrating from far away, even before it passed through the steel and into his skull. The sound grew louder and louder, and went silent. He heard feet clang on metal flooring just outside. Then something heavy fell against the door and rattled down its surface. He yanked himself back into the cell as the locks within the door clattered open and it swung outwards. He was ready, crouched low on the floor below the eyeline of someone standing in the doorway.
Oh, come with me, emissary, said Yalen. There's not much time.
Argonis lifted Yalen from his feet and slammed him into the doorframe. The human gagged, hands rising on instinct to the fingers around his throat.
Be still, growled Argonis
as he glanced into the corridor beyond. An iron warrior lay beneath the door, hands still gripping a bolt gun. Smoke filled the space beyond, coiling in the silent flashes of alert lights. He reached down and pulled the bolter from the iron warrior's grip. He took a slow breath. The scent and taste of the air spoke of weapon fire, of melter charge detonations and overloaded wiring. There was something else, too. A tingle of sweet sugar scent on the edge of his senses. He looked down at the supine iron warrior and at the man pinned by his hand to the wall. Yalen looked back at him, his eyes cold and without fear.
One twitch of witchcraft and you die, he said. Why would I do that, when I've gone to such trouble to free you? And what makes you think I did all this alone?
An armored figure stepped out of the smoke haze. He wore metallic blue battle plates and had a Volkite charger leveled at Argonis. His eyes were cold green lenses in a beaked helm. He looked relaxed, as though he had just wandered onto the scene, as if he were almost bored by it. Argonis had seen that air before, and knew that to consider it weakness would be a fatal mistake. Argonis nodded. The blue-armored warrior did not shift his aim. Argonis let go of Yalen. There was nothing else to do. For the next few minutes, he did not care why the Alpha Legion was here. All that mattered was getting clear of the cell. A strict hierarchy of needs applied to his next actions. He had a weapon, but he needed armor, his own by preference. Then he needed the Tech Witch, and, most importantly, he needed Prophecius. After that, he would find a way to Perturabo.
The others? Snapped Argonis. Down the passage, 50 meters left, then 20 meters right. Doors should release, but only for the next 4 minutes. Route was clear as of 61 seconds ago.
Argonis folded out of the door and began to move down the smoke-filled corridor, keeping low and hugging the walls. Yalen and the Alpha Legion warrior followed, their movements fast and fluid. He reached Sota Nul's cell first and pulled open the door. The figure he saw sketched in the silent pulse of the alert lights was a floating ball of coiled metal limbs and chromed snakes. A pair of what might have been atrophied legs was tucked up against her torso, like the bone and skin limbs of a stillborn chick. A blister of optic lenses protruded from the top of the mass. Red light glowed in her many eyes. Chains of lightning held her in place above a humming box of black metal. He looked at the machine and put 3 bolt rounds into it. The lightning chains collapsed as the box exploded. Sota Nul began to fall, and then halted in midair. Flesh metal tentacles unfolded around her. Argonis turned away. "Follow," he said, and began to move again. Propheus was unchained in a bare cell, the thrumming dome of a null field above him. Argonis shot out the field projector, and the null dome vanished into ozone and smoke. Yelun flinched as the masked astropath stepped forward. Argonis turned to Yelun.
"Equipment," he said. 15 meters left, there is a cache. The door is disabled."
He paused, licked his lips, and a tendril of tattooed scales formed at the corner of his mouth.
"You need to move fast, emissary." "What is your plan from here?"
"If you intend to reach Perturabo, you need to get to the Sickle Blade. It will be fueled and prepared for launch."
"Just like that?"
"A great deal has gone into this operation since you summoned me."
Argonis's gaze hardened.
"I did not summon you."
Yelun's face had gone still, his eyes flickering over Argonis's face.
"Well, the signal came through with the activation ciphers given to Horus, and from Horus to you.
One of us is lying.
And what reason would I have to lie?"
Argonis heard the microscopic noise as the Alpha Legion warrior behind him shifted.
"No," said Yelun, shaking his head. "There is another possibility."
"Another possibility," said Argonis carefully. His bolter was still in his hand, held low at his side. "What other possibility could there be?" Argonis turned. The movement was casual, as though he were looking around at the others in the room. He fired his gun into the thigh of the warrior behind him as he turned. The warrior slammed back, leg armor shattering. Argonis grabbed him as he fell and hugged his head into the bolt gun's muzzle. The burst of rounds soared into the legionnaire's faceplate and tore his head apart. Argonis dropped the corpse, turned and brought his gun up. Genuine shock split Yelun's face. Clusters of malformed tattoo patterns bloomed and withered there.
"Propheus," he said quietly,
and the astropath stepped closer. The air took on a storm pressure edge. Yelun's normally calm eyes flicked up to Propheus's iron face.
"You lied to us," said Argonis. "You lied to us from the start. You have been here since the Iron Warriors were here, amongst them, watching them, leeching secrets. You knew what was happening on this world. Lies layered under lies. How could you be what you are and not?"
"Why?"
began Yelun. "And why did you free us? What are we, a weapon to be used now because something has gone wrong?"
"He sent a signal."
"Black Oculus.
Tell me what you know of that."
"We..."
The man was fighting to keep calm. Argonis could feel Propheus's presence at his shoulder, hot and sharp against his skin. He could see the astropath's iron mask reflected in Yelun's eyes.
"Propheus," Argonis said carefully. "Take it from him."
The astropath extended a hand, green silk falling back from skeletal fingers tipped with the silver stylus spikes. Frost flashed up Argonis's arm from where he held Yelun's neck. He felt a stab of pain in his mind, but he was ready for it, and it was weak. Propheus's fingers were extending slowly towards Yelun's open eyes.
"You have to stop them,"
hissed Yelun.
"They almost have it. We cannot stop them, not now."
The tips of Propheus's fingers were a hair's width from the smooth surface above Yelun's pupil.
"What is this battle for? What are they here for? Why are you here?"
"For a weapon. A weapon of primordial destruction."
Yelun nodded carefully.
"A weapon left here when there were still gods to war in the heavens. That is why my masters came here, and why Perturabo is here now."
"If you say you were doing this for the War Master, I will watch as your eyes are pulled out."
"We serve Alpharius, and Alpharius is loyal."
Argonis looked at the man for a long moment, then nodded slowly.
"So you were lying from the start," said Argonis.
Argonis brought his bolt gun up and fired. One round into each of the eyes, one into the heart. He paused, looking down at the scattered meat and red liquid which had been the man. After a second, he turned away, wiped the blood from his face.
An unexpected tactical choice,
hissed Sotanul.
If the liar has no tongue, then he will tell no more lies.
An aphorism I am not familiar with.
It's from Chthonia.
Argonis stepped to the door. If Yelen had not lied about the immediate situation, then they now had less than 2 minutes before the Iron Warriors began to respond to the breakout. He began to run. He needed to reach his armor, and then they needed to get out.
What is your intention?
Asked Sotanul. We are going to follow Yelen's plan. We are going to get to the Lord of Iron, and we are going to do the War Master's will. We are going to call him to heel. Io watched Yelen die, and shifted a set of variables to fixed values. She felt her face twitch. She was smiling, a sign of pleasure, but she was not conscious of why. Strange, very strange. The operative's death had been almost certain given Argonis's personality structure and the information available to him. He had time to piece together a few basic strings of logic. The Alpha Legion was here. They were concerned with the discovery of secrets, and now they had freed him. He knew that they knew more than they had told him. The response from a warrior conditioned, trained, and seasoned in the Sons of Horus was obvious. She replayed a recording of the execution. Fast and brutal, a killing straight from the gang warrens of Chthonia. The tri-shot obliteration technique was interesting. The descriptions she had read had not conveyed the speed or mess. Yes, mess. That was the correct phrase. Brain and blood and bone all sprayed across the walls, floor and ceiling. For his part, Yelen had also had little choice. The Alpha Legion had spent a long time trying to contain the Iron Warriors' activities on Talon, and now he believed that they were about to achieve their true goal. The escalating battle on the plains of Kediv was significant, but to Yelen it was a sideshow. He believed that they were about to lose a prize they had worked for years to secure. So he had freed Argonis and told him part of the truth in the hope that Argonis would find a way to shut the Iron Warriors down. Desperation. Such a clean tool when applied. Now she just needed to make sure that something twitched at the edge of her awareness. Her first instinct was to override it. She had been deep in the data-stroke-problem-stroke-kill space for a long time now, and had blocked out all but the most basic awareness of her body and environment. She flicked between netfly views covering her hiding place. Nothing. There was nothing there. She went back to the flow of projections. Stinging cold enveloped her. Needles of pain stabbed into her skull. She felt her teeth clamped together, tasted blood as she bit her tongue. She tried to move, but her limbs were cold and cramped, and invisible fingers of ice were holding her still. A wall of displaced air slammed into her. The duct she was curled in came apart. She fell, limbs still locked in a ball, and hit a metal grate 10 meters below her. Bones broke in her back, legs and arms. Her mind fought to divide what was going on into data and failed. The pain was profound, stronger even than her modified body could cope with, too strong to ignore. A boot lashed into the base of her back, and she felt something rupture. Hands ripped the digi-needlers from her fingers. The joints popped and detonated fresh pain in her arms. Data, enemy has knowledge of... Another kick, this time across her face, ripping the visor from her eyes. Her data projections and thought lines were falling apart, replaced by a vivid awareness that she was bleeding inside, that she could feel splinters of bone in her muscles.
Calm now, said a smooth and reasonable voice. This is just the way this meeting must be, mademoiselle. You are very capable, and that ability demands respect. See what you are experiencing now as our mark of respect.
She heard steps moving towards her. The metal grating she was lying on shook slightly with each footfall. There was another sound nearby, the soft inhalation-exhalation cycle of one, no, two other people. Hands touched her face. She tried to snap her arms up, to grab, to strike. She could not. Her limbs simply would not move. The fingers felt warm, the tips smooth as they prized her eyelids open. Light flooded her eyes. She looked up. Huge turbines turned far above. Ducts crisscrossed the air in between. A ragged hole split the underside of a duct 10 meters above where she lay. She recognized the effect of adhesive-tipped crack grenades. Beneath her, a gantry of gridded metal spanned a rockcrete crevasse. Blackness hid the bottom of the drop. A face moved into view. It was not a smiling face, nor a cruel one, but it was the last face she had expected to see again.
I know you didn't kill him, but I have a suspicion that I should thank you for the death of my brother, said Yelan.